was an original song by Claude Debussy, recorded by Mary's father, Walter Huebner.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the first podcast from the Art, Design, and Architecture Museum, or the ADNA Museum, at the University of California, Santa Barbara. I am Emily Korb.
I'm Noelle Barr.
And I'm Morgan Owen.
And we are the art history majors at UCSB. We are also current interns at the ADNA Museum.
For those of you who don't know, UCSB and students and faculty have their own art museum at their disposal, which has been running for over the past 50 years. It houses fine art, local art, and the work of students and faculty.
This coming summer, UCSB's Art, Design, and Architecture Museum will exhibit The Muse Project, a collaborative show curated by our newest curator, Sylvia Perea. Artist Mary Huebner will be challenged to find her muse in the architecture collection, and architect Jeff Shelton will find his muse in the art collection. The show will be on display from July 13th to September 1st, 2019, and admission is free to everyone.
Today, our guest is Mary Huebner, who is an alum from UCSB. Welcome, Mary.
To start us off, can you give us a brief overview of who you are as an artist and what kind of work it is that you create?
I'm a hardworking artist. I've been making art since I can remember. My professional life began when I graduated from UCSB, getting my MFA, and I started exhibiting in a gallery in Santa Barbara, and then also in the Bay Area. A private person saw my work and wanted to represent me. From there, I was then invited to exhibit in different galleries in San Francisco, Seattle, Portland, St. Louis, New York, Boston, and some other places. So I've been a hard-working artist, and I have worked in the medium of collage ever since I did my graduate work with William Dole, who was the wonderful artist that I worked with during my MFA. And he made collages, and I got involved with taking fragments of things and piecing them together, and taking a handful of parts and making a whole out of it.
You graduated from UCSB in the 70s. How did those connections and resources have an impact on your art making?
Well, it was a wonderful foundation to be in Santa Barbara. At first, I was flailing and had no direction. I took an art class, and the art teacher didn't get me, and I didn't get the art teacher. I think he was a TA. So I found refuge in the literature department. Or I would go to the bookstore and see who was reading something interesting, and I'd take their class. So Max Schott, who was an English teacher at the College of Creative Studies, suggested that with my work and my interest, I should apply to the college. And that was the best thing ever, because there were working artists, working writers, published writers, dancers, scientists, printmakers that came and taught at the college. And so I had teachers like Paul Wanner, Masami Kanemitsu, Alice Baber, Charles Garabedian, and it was an amazing experience. You know, we'd go during lunch and watch the New York City Ballet rehearse. And I was also married young at 19, and when I was still a senior, I was pregnant. And so when I graduated and then started to continue doing my work, I knew I really needed a studio space. And when Sienna was 2 and eligible for daycare, I applied for master's at UCSB. And I had the good fortune of finding William Dole, who had a huge influence on me. And not only his artwork, but his understated way of teaching. There was a kindness, and he was not pedagogic, he was not demanding. He would never draw on your drawing. He would just say, you know, that's interesting there. And he would help you sort of develop your own voice. And so that's a huge, hugely important foundation for me. But also I think seeing other aspects of, you know, filling other aspects of my curiosity in biology or in literature, took Spanish, religious studies, anthropology. So all of that gives you a more of a Catholic or a universal education. And I think, and geology, the sciences, all of that has fed in some way to my work.
Not only are you a collage artist, but you're also a book artist. Can you elaborate on the different projects that you do?
When I married my current husband, Mr. McDuff Everton, who's a photographer, He was doing a lot of editorial work in photography, and those assignments took us all parts of the world. And I either accompanied him as an assistant, or I wrote the article and he did the photography for it for National Geographic Traveler, Condé Nast Traveler, New York Times Magazine, etc. And so a lot of the times that I was on the road, I would keep sketchbooks and notebooks and journal notes. And the most logical way of re-entering the studio after being away for several weeks would be to take those journal notes and sketches and start to reformulate a way of expressing that in terms of a painting, drawing, or collage. And in doing so, I realized I've got all these words that I've written about it, and I've got all these images, and if you put words and images together, you can make a book. I worked with Sandra Reese, Harry and Sandra Reese, but I made my first paper in the driveway at Harry Reese's in 1980, working with a master paper maker, Suki Hughes. And then Sandra walked me through my very first clamshell box book. And I've now, Simplemente Maria Press, which is my imprint, has 17 books in its catalog.
So you create these sketches and then collage on top of them. Can you explain that collaborative process?
Well, I've been doing collage for about 45 years, so it really depends on the series that I'm working on. These recent collages, I am embedding photographic images of pictures I've taken, details of, that I've drawn over or inverted or played with in some way or another, but that's just one of the tools in my drawing kit. I work with paper that I've made by hand, or paper that is either Japanese paper or rag paper, in other words, plant-based papers, that I alter in some way through pigment or through sanding or through marbleizing. And so I'm very interested in texture and surface. And I juxtapose this, in the case of this series, Veiled Unveiled, which I'll be exhibiting, with actual drawing. Just I love drawing, and I'm just using plain graphite. I love the silvery nature of graphite. And so the mixed media is truly mixed media. I was just recently in a collage show, and the other artists in it were saying that they have drawers collecting, you know, clippings from magazines and different, you know, labels of cans of food and, you know, all kinds of things, and put them together. Collage comes from the word colle, meaning glue, to glue. And I've never collected things like that, but I have a whole archive, so to speak, of painted paper that I keep. And those, from those scraps, I construct my work. I work on the floor. I work from all four sides. At some point in time, depending on how abstract, or in these cases, these are pretty figurative, but most of my work is much more abstract than this, I'll pin it up on the wall and I'll work again on it. So you see a different perspective. It's like looking at aerial photography and then looking at the stand of trees, you know, from straight on. I like taking those different perspectives. And part of that came from when I was a kid. As I was telling Noelle, I was cross-eyed when I was a kid. And I went through two surgeries and then had to wear a patch on my good eye. And I was always drawing, and sometimes my drawings would veer off, so I'd turn them upside down to correct them. And it was many years later, reading Drawing on the Right Side of the Brain, that she suggests all these things to do. It's like, I've been doing that since I was 10, so nobody would laugh at my drawings.
Returning briefly to your books, what is your process for preservation?
Well, I was trained by William Dole, who encouraged me to use really good materials, really good brushes, pH quality paper. And I learned with my very first collage, putting it together with rubber cement, that really wasn't the way to go. So I can't use stuff that's going to fade or whatever, because if I'm going to take that much time to work on something, it's got to be real. On the other hand, curators are always, or conservators are often, appalled at how artists handle their own work, you know, pinning it on the wall or laying it on the floor and walking on it or rolling it up. I mean, it's really bad. But that said, I'm, as I get older, much more conscious of trying to care and annotate and archive my work. And one of the archives that has been supporting my work in artist books since 1995, when I made my first one, was UCSB Special Collections. And some people say, oh, you can't see artist books because it's hard to exhibit them and whatnot. You make an appointment at Special Collections. You can go in, and if you've got clean hands and an interest in what you're seeing, you can see amazing things. It's all there. It's free and it's accessible. You just have to make the effort to go.
The three-dimensionality of your work is vital. How important is it to see your work live rather than in a photograph?
Oh, I think you can't say you've seen something unless you've seen it in person. There's something wonderful about the scale, the brush strokes, if those are visible, where you see it, the context you're seeing it in, that you can't get even with the most wonderful digital reproductions or the most gorgeous Taschen book. They still can't give you the scale and the surface quality as well as encountering stuff. Plus, if you're standing in front of something, you and the piece have a relationship. Just physically, your body, you know, how tall are you compared to looking at a painting? And, you know, how wide is the painting? And what do you notice? Notice what it is that strikes you about something. And one of the things I love is when I go into an exhibit and walk out of the exhibit and I start seeing the world the way the artist has seen things, and you know that's touched you in a way that's intimate.
A lot of your work is about intimacy, and what does that mean to you?
I think it means looking closely and letting yourself feel. And there's an intimate process to making anything because you're usually quiet and you're usually focused. So things come out that maybe wouldn't come out otherwise if you were engaged or distracted. Also, when I was drawing from these ancient sculptures, I would draw on small pieces of paper in this tiny room. So it was a very intimate, quiet process. And also, working from sculpture rather than a live human being, I could get as close as I want. I could look at the curves and forms of this human form replicated in cold, hard stone, but that all of a sudden evokes a kind of sensuality and a presence that I can feel within. And I wanted to convey that sense of touch and of embodiment, the sense that we all have, you know, we walk around in a body and our head gets in the way sometimes, but there's this sense of embodiment, of being able to understand the empathy between one person and another. You can't do that unless you have some sense of intimacy.
It's come full circle, from your undergraduate career to receiving your master's of fine arts to exhibiting at the University Museum. And since you are one of the featured artists for the upcoming Muse project at UCSB's Art Design and Architecture Museum, could you tell us how you got involved with that?
Oh, it's a wonderful story. I had invited Elise Gonzalez, who, you know, is a friend and a much respected colleague, to visit my studio to see this new body of work. And Bruce Robertson had been familiar with the work and had urged Elise to come by and take a look. And she brought Sylvia Perea, who's the new curator of architecture at UCSB. And after we spent a lovely hour or so talking and looking at books and collages, Elise commented, you know, you're really a builder. She looked at the collages and saw them in terms of construction. And then she looked at my books and saw the layers, the time it takes to open them up and how they reveal themselves. And she felt that there was an architecture to it. Fast forward a week, Sylvia comes bursting into the studio saying, I have this idea. And she's so full of life and so wonderful. She laid out this idea that both Jeff Shelton and I would be paired in this project, in which he would look at the art archive, I would look at the architecture drawings and archive, and find things that resonate with us, find things that had something to do with the work we were exhibiting. And it also influenced the work I chose to exhibit. And it was just a lot of fun to dive into the archive and find things and discover things that I hadn't known before. And I've loved working on this project. We're going to construct the Thayer Gallery, which was named after Jean Thayer, who's one of my most favorite and admired people. She's 101 now, and I want to be like Jean when I grow up, but it's going to be in the Thayer Gallery, and we will set it up as if it were a working studio or a simulacrum of that, so that the work won't be framed behind glass, it'll be pinned, there'll be artifacts having to do with the making of the paper, the handmade paper, the watermarked paper, and for Jeff, he'll have a table that will have lots of his models and details of his tiles. So I'm not exactly sure what he's showing. He's not exactly sure what I'm showing, and it's going to be kind of a wonderful coming together. We both seem to get our inspiration from the Mediterranean, which is an interesting connection. I've been working with antiquities from the Mediterranean, also from Southeast Asia, but this series is all ancient Greek and Roman antiquities. And, of course, Jeff has been working with taking early southern Spain vernacular architecture, then reinterpreted by Gaudi and other people, and has made his own unique style. So we're both kind of rooted in the Mediterranean.
So you mentioned you and Jeff Shelton are choosing pieces. You are selecting works from the architecture collection, and he is selecting works from the fine art collection. Which pieces were you drawn to include in this exhibition?
Well, my very first idea just seemed natural, to look at Wright Ludington and Lockwood DeForest, because Wright Ludington, of course, gave this wonderful collection of antiquities to the Santa Barbara Museum of Art. And he and Lockwood are cousins, which I did not know. And they made their first European trip when they were in their 20s to Italy and a little bit of France. And Lockwood's father was a famous landscape painter, beautiful, beautiful landscape, and then he became a very well-known landscape architect, designing Valverde, Casa de Herrera, the gardens of Botanic Garden. And so there was a link between his organic way of depicting space and also his subject matter, integrating sculpture into the landscape.
The exhibition's concept and title is The Muse. Can you explain your interpretation of that theme in relation to the pieces that you finally selected from the archive?
Well, Sylvia came up with the title, and I love the word muse. I've actually used it for a series of mine, Muse series, which went into my second book with Pablo Neruda, Intimacies, Poems of Love. But muse not only is from the mythological, the seven or nine muses that come of that, and it's music and dance and theater and art, etc. And so there's that, but there's also the verb, you know, that you're musing on something, you're really considering it, you're thinking about it in more of an abstract way, close to daydreaming, but kind of conjuring. So I think part of it for me is just dreaming about these and looking and finding things where my curiosity leads me. And I think that's a really important part of the creative process.
One of the hopes of the exhibition is that it incorporates a creative process rather than presenting sterile pieces behind glass. Are there any pieces you include specifically to convey that concept?
Yes, but my opinion is that pieces behind glass are not sterile. They just take a little more effort for someone to look at and to understand that somebody made that. When I go to museums, I always look at the dates of their birth and death, and how old was that person when she did that painting, you know, and make it real, you know, but it takes a little bit of effort to do that. In this case, we'll do that as living artists by showing some of our processes. I will be showing some of the vinyl that I've lino cut in order to make the temporary watermarks. I'll be showing the gloves that are stained with ultramarine that I use when I'm working on dyeing the paper. And I'll be showing my palette, which is actually a slab of marble. And as you may know, a lot of the marble sculptures were polychrome. They were colored. And sometimes you get these garish reproductions that are plaster with paint on them, and they're so horrible. You know, where marble is alive and it's got pores, and they mix the pigment with wax, and you know, and it sinks into the surface. So I started experimenting with that on this little slab of marble, and it became my palette. So aspects of making and doing, and I imagine Jeff will do the same thing with his notes and his ephemera that he has compiled with his way of working.
You mentioned earlier how Sylvia Perea was inspired by your work and its corresponds to architecture. What other ways do you see your work and Jeff's overlapping?
Well, as I'd mentioned before, I think both of us are inspired by the area around the Mediterranean in different ways. I've known Jeff for years and admire his work, and he's a wonderful human being, and we're friends. I think that some of the most beautiful things I've seen are his sketches of Spain and of France, and in these little notebooks that he makes. And I've got drawers of sketches, not nearly as elegant, but they're usually on steno pads, but which I always carry with me when I was on the road traveling. And so I have this archive of notations and sketches from the American West to Thailand. So I think we both use sketching and drawing as a way of thinking and of sorting out, because drawing is a really wonderful way of making things real, because you pay attention and you notice details. And I think Jeff has a terrific eye for detail, and I have a good eye for detail.
Your book, Intimacy, and some other accompanying work will be featured in the exhibition. Can you tell me more about that and your inspiration?
Sure. The full title is Intimacy, Drawing with Light, Drawn from Stone. I had spent a few years from 2014 to 2017 in Rome, and I had a dear friend who kindly let me use his small apartment, and there was a tiny desk in the small apartment. After I would be spending the whole day running around looking at museums and sculptures and things, because my interest in antiquity goes way back to the 1980s, so it's something that's an abiding interest, I would go home, and on this small pieces of Fabriano paper, I would make these sketches. When I got home to my studio the first time, I took these sketches and decided to blow them up into these large drawings made with powdered white titanium to kind of simulate marble, and graphite and ink. So they're large drawings. Then when I was able to do a residency in Fabriano, Italy, which is where the watermark was developed in the 13th century, I thought I should do something with watermarks. And I had done three books previously that employed watermarks to some extent, but I never used it as the main part of the piece. And so I took these huge sketches that I had blown up from these little tiny sketches and turned them back into line drawings so that they could be laser cut on vinyl. And then I packed that in my suitcase and went to Fabriano and started making temporary watermarks. And the watermark is, it's a ridge by adhering this vinyl to the screen. Traditionally, they would be hand-sewn filigree of gold, so the watermark is something that you would use over and over. And usually a watermark is seen as an authenticator, so you hold up a $100 bill and you can see the watermark in it. But I wanted to use it as a drawing tool, so that's why I call it Drawing with Light and Drawing from Stone, because I'm drawing from marble. The project evolved as I was making the paper, and then I realized that the beautiful ivory-toned paper that we were making in Fabriano would be nice to counterpose with a darker color so you could see the watermark. And there's nothing more Italian to me than ultramarine blue. I mean, at the time when lapis lazuli was the only source in Afghanistan, it was worth more than gold. And it was ground, and it had this luminosity to it that was beautiful. So the only way I could simulate that ultramarine was to saturate my pulp in New York City at DNA with ultramarine pigment. So in a way, it's a collaboration between old world, ancient style paper making in Fabriano and contemporary making at DNA in New York City.
I was wondering if you ever thought of the watermark in terms of its tie to the element of water.
Good question, and yes, there's this fluidity to not only the making of a watermark, but the sense that it comes about through the process of making paper. It's embedded in the paper.
Tell us more about your watermark as well as the preface that you wrote.
So the introduction to my suite of 9 watermark drawings that are hand-painted with watercolor on the verso, or in the case of the ultramarine blue paper, hand-drawn with graphite. The watermark technique was first introduced in Fabriano in 1282. I grasp the decal and plunge this 2-part screen into a vat of pulp-clouded water. Lift and feel the vacuum smack as the screen, heavy with this slurry, breaks the surface. Then with swift movements north, south, east, west, the pulp settles as the water streams away. Pulp naturally wants to lay evenly on the flat plane of the papermaking screen, so less of it clings to the delicate ridges of the raised drawing. Removing the decal and inverting the screen, I couch the newly formed sheet onto felt, gently pressing the embossed design into the nascent sheet of paper. Holding the crisp, dried paper up to the sky, sunlight illuminates a memory of the drawing in the form of the watermark.
Fantastic. Finally, is there anything you'd like to add about this upcoming exhibition?
I've had work in the museum involved in different group shows, but this is the first time that there's a more substantial representation of what I do. So I'm very honored and happy.
Well, thank you for joining us here today. And those of you who have not yet stepped foot into the ADNA Museum, do it. There's no charge for students, and it is open Wednesday to Sunday from noon to 5. Furthermore, do not miss Mary and Jeff's exhibition, The Muse Project, which is open to the public beginning Saturday, July 13th until Sunday, September 1st. There will also be an opening reception held on July 26th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m.
Okay, and I wanted to thank the interviewers and the researchers for this podcast, and that's Emily Korb, Noel Barr, and Morgan Owen. They did a great job.
You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram at ADA Museum, no space, and on Facebook by searching Art, Design, and Architecture Museum. Feel free to comment about what you thought of this podcast. And for upcoming events and exhibitions, visit our website, www.museum.ucsb.edu.
And thank you to the UCSB Special Research Collections for the use of our intro and outro music, an original song by Claude Debussy, recorded by Mary's father, Walter Huebner. We would also like to thank Sylvia Perea, the Curator of Architecture and Design at the ADNA, and Sofia Jimenez, the Art History Internship Coordinator, for all of their support.